Yeah, it does feel a bit like some part of chess history also left when Boris Spassky passed with the
History would
sanity
have been
change.
completely different, yeah. If you would have taken the forfeit. Do you know how expensive the most expensive one is? What's your guess?
1.5 million.
Yes. How did you know that? But if something happens and this was the trigger, these genes are going to go up in value. So it's kind of like an investment as well. You can sell them later on.
Hey, can we get this American to do some publicity work? Pay him $50,000. Some Russian oligarch with a lot of money.
I don't see that happening.
Levitov, for example. Did you cheat against Magnus?
No.
But like, what? I mean, what if that happens?
Fabi, good to see you. Welcome back to the US. Obviously, it's been a while since you've been here. Big week in the world of chess. We got called out in the comments last time because we did not talk about Spassky. Of course, rest in peace to a great Boris Spassky. Just passed, I think, a couple of days after we recorded that one. So we obviously, for a good reason, did not talk about him. But yeah, big loss for the world of chess. Everybody knows him. Well, a lot of people know him because of his match against Bobby Fischer, 1972, the 10th world champion. A man with great influence in the world of chess. Your take on it? Have you
Yeah,
ever met him?
no, we
Because I never met him, so.
never met. Yeah, he was the 10th world champion. Of course, he's mostly known for, I mean, besides the world championship, for the very famous match in 72.
Yeah.
But of course, he did also win the world championship before that. And he was one of the most influential players of the mid 1900s, for sure. Along with his fellow world champions, and yeah, he died at the age of 88, so he lived a long life. I think he wasn't in great health for a
Towards the
while.
end, yeah.
I don't really have many Spassky stories, but I did meet his son, and he told some stories when he visited St. Louis because the family was donating some memorabilia from Spassky's collection, a lot of it related to the match with Fischer, but not just that.
Like score sheets and stuff like that. It's actually a very cool exhibition that's still happening, I think, at the World Chess Hall of Fame.
It was very interesting to see that, also to meet his son. So we spoke a bit. He told some stories about his father. His son isn't really a chess player, but obviously he was around the chess world a lot. So that was very interesting. That was a few years ago that he was here with his family. Really nice guy as well. And unfortunately, I never met Boris Spassky. But yeah, I wish I had. I've only met a few world champions, and yeah, there's not so many of the great old world champions who are still alive. Of course, Gary is still going strong. And I've been lucky to play him also.
Topalov, Kramnik, etc., etc.
Well, okay, I don't
Then he
consider,
wants,
don't
right?
consider those the old, yeah, the old world champions, but the guys from the mid 1900s in 2008, Bobby Fischer passed away at a relatively young age, 64 years
60
old,
something, yeah, 64.
64, yeah. And, it does feel a bit like, some part of chess history also left when Boris Spassky passed.
Yeah, and I feel I should know way more stories because Yasser always tells them on the broadcast, but yeah, none of them really come to mind right now, and that's why I actually wanted to maybe have Yasser in one of the next episodes to give him a worthy tribute, let's say. For I was looking through some of his games, I was looking through some of his quotes and stuff like that, just kind of get an idea of what type of person he was. And one of the things that struck me was, I think a quote of his that he was saying that his worst years in chess were when he was a world champion, because of the pressure, of being the king and not having that many people around you. I don't know, probably there were some political connotations added to that as well, but obviously I don't have much detail or much information about that. But somehow it felt very, very similar to what Ding was going through. Obviously, the scale is completely different, and you know, he was there for a longer time. But yeah, strike me as kind of interesting and somewhat similar to Ding's situation. Anyway, so that was a big one. Obviously, everybody was pouring in with their own tributes, and that was ours. Great chess player, great world champion, and a great human from the stories I've read. Like, even with Bobby, they had such a rivalry, but they were still considering each other friends.
Yeah, I think they were friends. Especially after the match.
After the match, exactly.
Yeah. Bobby, I think, considered him one of his friends, one of his few friends.
Yeah.
Because, of course, Bobby wasn't very close to many people. And, I don't know the reason why. We can't really get into Fischer's head so much.
There was a lot of respect coming from, Spassky's side as well towards Bobby. Like, he always saw him coming. Even when he was a world champion, he was like, this guy is probably better than I am, you know? So yeah, there was a lot of
respect. He could have won the match in 72. Of course. You know, I mean, Fischer was basically threatening to leave the match, right? But yeah, he probably could have won the match by default if he had wanted to. it all worked out a different way. But it is one of the most iconic matches for sure.
History would have been completely different, yeah. If you would have taken the forfeit.
Well, definitely in terms of, I mean, if Spassky had been world champion after 72, and then he would have definitely played in 75, but would it have been so different if Karpov qualifies the world championship match in 75 and then beats, I mean, he's going to beat Spassky?
Probably.
Most likely, because Karpov, I think, at that point was very close to unstoppable, and maybe it wouldn't have changed so much. I mean, Fischer, unfortunately, didn't really get much out of the world championship. I mean, he dominated the world, and then he left as soon as he started to dominate it.
Mm-hmm.
So, we can, of course, speculate what would have happened if this or that, or if Fischer had decided to keep playing, if Fischer had decided to play Karpov. But yeah, the 72 match was started 2-0 for Spassky, won by forfeit, won very famously.
Bishop takes h2,
yeah. The first game. But after that, Fischer was the superior player. But it's also not to Spassky's discredit. I mean, Fischer at that point was unstoppable. He beat Taimonov 6-0. He beat Larsen 6-0. He beat Petrosian 4.5, 1.5, I think. There was no way to imagine how someone could stop him at that point. He was just far too strong. He was ahead of his time. But Spassky was incredibly, incredibly strong player as well.
Hmm.
I think, I mean, I don't know exactly his personality, but I think people said that his only real deficit as a chess player was that he wasn't the hardest working.
Mm-hmm.
So despite his great ability, he didn't put in as much work as Fischer.
I think Kramnik had this funny quote on his Twitter that somebody visited him in France, and on his wall there was a quote or like a note saying, "Learn French, idiot."
Mm.
So apparently he did not learn French while living in France for many, many years, and that's mostly because, as you just pointed out, he was perhaps a little bit on the lazy side.
Well, I think it's relative, of course, because you know, you have to work hard to get to that. Besides being very talented, very gifted, you have to be super hardworking at some point.
Yeah.
But there's definitely a relative of like maybe Fischer's obsessiveness and then a lower level of obsessiveness over chess. And if you want to compete with a generational player like Fischer, then you have to sacrifice a lot outside of chess as well, which is not everyone wants to do that.
Yeah, obviously, huge part of history, chess history at least, past the last couple of days. So yeah, rest in peace. And I'm sure we'll probably discuss about him at length, maybe with Yasser in one of the podcast episodes, if the comments are interested in that, if you guys in the comments are interested in that. But that was one of the stories that happened for the last couple of days. Another one was just today or maybe yesterday. Magnus, I believe, entered Jean's history. The most expensive, and I've done some research on this one, I think he's right now on number 4 most expensive pair of jeans in history at $36,100. Do you know how expensive the most expensive one is? What's your guess?
1.5 million.
Yes. How did you know?
I didn't know. I just guessed.
Okay. Yes, it's 1.5 million. It has a bunch of diamonds on it.
Which means that the jeans are not expensive.
It's not really the jeans, yeah. The second one is 250K.
That's a serious drop-off.
Also diamonds, plenty of diamonds. Mm. And the third one is a pair of Levi's from 1880 that got sold for 60K at auction a few years back.
That's interesting.
1880.
Yeah, that's a long time. And they're still in shape.
Barely hanging on. Yeah, they're ripped and whatnot. But right now they're quoted at 150, so they definitely appreciate it in value.
I feel like the diamonds are like it's jewels on something.
It's not really
right? It's a bit of a cheat, right? I mean, it's like, yeah, I'm selling you these jeans. They just happen to have $1 million worth of diamonds attached to them.
Yes.
And that's where the actual value is on the jeans. It's the same sometimes I feel with watches. Like, you have all these diamonds in the watch. I'm like, okay, it's the diamonds that are costing you, right?
Yeah. What's your take on that? 36,100.
I don't know.
You know who got it?
No.
Peter Attia.
Oh, isn't he the doctor?
Yeah.
Isn't he like
the longevity guy?
Yeah. I've seen his the VO2 max and all that stuff, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
I've seen some of his stuff on YouTube.
Yeah.
Some interviews of him and like Rhonda Patrick. And no, there's so much chess crossover with the chess world and the tech world, and then now the tech and like healthcare side.
I think
things.
So. I think
there's
so.
A lot of crossover with that too. I don't know exactly how. Okay, it kind of makes sense, but I keep seeing these people who are like in health, and then they cross over into the chess world briefly, and then especially with tech as well. There's a lot of tech people who are interested in chess. But yeah, okay, so 36,000 for someone who's rich, and for whatever reason, he has his reason to want these jeans. I have no idea.
And the money went to charity, by the way.
Yeah, that's good.
So
that's good.
Obviously, Magnus did not pocket 36K for his jeans. He gave it to charity.
Yeah, I don't really understand why you would want the jeans. Some historical significance, not really, in my opinion. Like, it's not a very historical thing. Because it didn't actually have so much impact. The way I view it is like, okay, there was a fight, but the fight was not really because of the genes, right? The fight was because of other things. And then,
but if things change, think about it this way, in like 5 years, let's say things change and FIDE gets look, I'm just speculating, obviously, and I'm not trying to say that this is the way it should be. But if something happens and this was the trigger, these jeans are going to go up in value. So it's kind of like an investment as well. You can sell them later on. Peter Attia probably will not sell them.
I'm not sure if it's such a good investment.
Yeah.
If that's your aim for resale value, I'm not sure if that's... But if you just want the jeans to say, I have the infamous jeans, I guess... Okay, it's not something that I particularly understand in terms of the desire to have them, but... I understand why people want certain things.
I think Levy bid on it at 16K.
Yeah, you know, I can actually understand why Levy
would have
wanted more.
Gotten some value out of it.
Because he'll display it on his stream. Yeah. And I can understand that when you're in the chess world and you're like a big public figure in chess, and then you can sort of monetize it to some extent. It would make more sense for Levy to get them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Also because of his name, there's like some sort of There's some sort of
that's right.
alliteration.
Some potential,
there,
right? Yeah. Some potential there. Yeah.
Anyway, it's not like the most interesting subject.
It's not, but it's kind of, you know, it was out in the news and it became somewhat discussed on Twitter as well. And yeah, good for him, good for charity, and yeah, good for history. And we want this type of like crossovers as well. I'm glad that somebody, you know, with a podcast, somebody that has some sort of a reach, and who knows, maybe now that he went on Joe Rogan, maybe we'll get some more chess players on this type of interesting podcasts. And me personally, like, he's actually one of the guys that I'm following occasionally for supplements, for whatnot, for longevity, VO2 max, whatnot. Like, I'm interested. I have an interest in this type of things just because it's fun, at least to.
I like this guy, Brian Johnson.
Oh, that's my guy. Yeah.
I think it's a bit ridiculous. Obviously, this is not. I don't think it's okay. I shouldn't say obviously. I don't think this is the way to extend your life. To
the guy's completely nuts.
To put yourself like he's a hamster on a wheel. I mean, he's just experimenting on himself, and also not having any sort of normality in your life.
Mm-hmm.
But I respect the dedication.
I'm fascinated.
He's very disciplined. And I do think it's also funny. He like takes out all his plasma and does a full plasma transfusion. Okay, I don't.
They had a plasma things. Party. Did you watch his?
No, I just saw something on Twitter.
So they had a plasma party with his son. He got plasma from his son, and he gave his dad his plasma. So they had a plasma threesome type of situation.
Nice. It's one of those things, again, I don't understand the appeal.
Yeah.
But I can understand why, like, it doesn't appeal to me personally, but I can understand why someone would get into that obsession. If you're maybe a somewhat obsessive person and you have way too much time and money and you're very, very ambitious and you just decide to tackle this goal, it's unclear what kind of goal he's trying to tackle. I'm not really sure if he really thinks that he's going to like make it to the point when, you know, when they extend the human life indefinitely. I maybe he has those kind of like
he wants to not die
godlike aspirations, or if he's just trying to extend it as much as is humanly possible. Which it's most likely not going to be the case either way, because I don't think that you can really play God with these things. But I do still admire the dedication. And
I love it. I'm fascinated by it. And I'm actually, I appreciate him from the simple fact that I think it pushes forward society as a whole and civilization as a whole on this topic. And he's the only one that seems to be interested to spend and has resources to spend millions of dollars and put himself as a guinea pig, more or less, and yeah, do all of these things. I think he even altered his genes at some point. He went somewhere where it's actually legal to do it, and he altered his genes. One of those CRISPR thing.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Not legal in the US. Like, he had to fly somewhere else.
I'll have to look this up.
Yeah. It's interesting. It's interesting. Do you want to get him on the pod?
Yeah,
we should
sure.
get him on the pod.
Sure. I mean, it's not really chess related at all, but it would be interesting to talk to him.
We're expanding our things. So that was it. What else is new? Hans in Russia, first American to play there since 2018. Gatkowski doing quite well, 2.5 out of 3.
No, wait. First, not the first American to play in Russia. That's for sure.
Since 2018.
No, that's that first to play in Aeroflot, maybe. I mean, I played in Russia in 2021, and I'm sure that others played after that as well.
Oh, you did.
But to play in Aeroflot, maybe.
Maybe in an open, yeah. Now, that's interesting because, yeah, I saw this on the forums, and I took it at face value, I guess. But they were saying that he's not, obviously, you were.
No, I mean, after 2022, of
you
course.
You played in 2020, 2021.
I would guess that
2022? Did you play in 2022
no,
as well?
No, no, because after the war, of course. I mean,
that was it. Yeah.
No, there was no thought to go to Russia after the beginning, like February of 22, I think it was.
Mm-hmm.
But 2021 was still a candidate in Yekaterinburg. So I played in 2020, 2021. And since then, of course, I haven't been back to Russia.
I used to play there very often. Like the first time I played was 2006. And I played the candidates in 2016, played the World Blitz Championship in 2010. The Tal Memorial was a constant. I mean, chess was very rich in Russia for a long time. Of course, after the invasion of Ukraine, after the war, there was no consideration to play there again.
Yeah, it's Aeroflot Open. It's an interesting decision, of course, by him. I am following the results of the tournament because, anyway, it's an interesting game. There's a lot of strong players.
Very strong event.
Yeah, it's a strong event. Jan Hamrichi is playing. Grishuk, Dubov, Artemyev, a lot of the best Russian players and some very strong players from outside of Russia. Hans, obviously, the highest rated among them. Amin Tabatabey, one of the also higher rated players playing. So yeah, I've been kind of following the results.
He's doing well so far, 2.5. I think Nepo is doing very well. They've played three games.
Yeah. Hans drew one game. Jan has won all his
games. Some surprises. Definitely some surprises. These opens are dangerous, man. Like, they're so dangerous because you see all these Russian kids, 2,500, 2,400, they can beat anybody. It's dangerous. So, you know, takes some courage to go there and play opens, especially after you've said that you don't want to play opens ever in your life. But also the circumstances are quite interesting. Him playing in Russia right now. He has to be a bit careful not to get in trouble.
Yeah.
Actually be able to get out of Russia.
I don't think he'll have trouble with that, but I don't think it's a very good decision regardless.
It's a strange decision. And he said he's not getting paid for it either. So, you know, you could be speculating that he's getting the bag for that. He got offered a lot of money and he's going to play for that. But he says that he paid for his own travels and he's just going to
play for an open tournament. They're not offering big starting fees, that's for sure. I don't know. Maybe they offer some conditions, but definitely not some big starting fees. It's a usual open.
But wouldn't you see some actor from a third party actor just being like, "Hey, can we get this American to do some publicity work? Pay him $50,000." Some Russian oligarch with a lot of money.
I don't see that happening.
Levitov, for example.
I really don't see that happening. We can speculate all we want. I have no idea. I really don't see that happening. I assume he just went to play an open tournament.
On his own accord, then.
Yeah. I'm not going to speculate because just the normal open tournaments, they don't pay much money. There's probably decent prizes.
There are. Yeah.
That's probably.
They're very decent.
It's a tournament which has value in terms of the FIDE circuit points it could potentially give. I guess, you know, it's, but it is still an issue. Like, it is a country that's actively involved in a war.
Yeah.
It's very unusual if you're not living in the country to play a tournament there. I mean, I remember there was this case in 2004. FIDE organized the World Championship, FIDE Knockout World Championship in 2004 in Libya. I guess it's a sort of similar thing. I mean,
not a lot of people play that one. I know that because I was just listening to, I think, Rustam's podcast.
He won this tournament.
Yeah.
He became the FIDE World Championship in 2004, winning this tournament, beating Mickey Adams in the last match.
And a lot of the top players were not participating in it because of that. And also, I think the prize fund was quite low. compared to others.
Yeah, I think first prize was 75,000. It was extremely low. I mean, it was very strong. Topalov was playing, Morozevich, I think, Mickey Rusum. I mean, it was a huge accomplishment to win. Of course, it was missing some players also. It was missing, I think, many Jewish players for this reason. But yeah, it's just weird to play in a country that's actively participating in a war.
Yeah, it is.
Hopefully at some point the war ends, whichever point that is. And then, you know, I don't know, of course. But yeah, at the moment, it's not something that I would do.
Speculate on his match against Dubov. Who do you think takes that? I think it's 18 games of blitz, 3+2. I might be wrong on the number, but it's a high number of blitz games.
Yeah, I think it was 18 games of blitz. I think they're pretty evenly matched in blitz. In classical, I would say Hans should be a favorite. In blitz, I think it's maybe Dubov is a tiny favorite. Maybe it's about even. I mean, Dubov is extremely successful in blitz.
He is very good.
Has been for, we can't ignore the results. He has been for the last few years extremely successful in blitz. In the World Blitz Championship, last time, because he forfeited a game against Hans, he did score the same amount of points as the leaders, but he wasn't, tiebreaks didn't work out.
Tiebreaks, yeah. Yeah.
But still, he forfeited a game and scored the same points as the leaders.
Mm-hmm.
Before that, he actually forfeited a game again against Jan Nepomniachtchi in 2023.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Was it 2023? Yeah, 2023.
And he still did pretty well in that one as well.
And he scored half a point less than Magnus, I believe.
Yeah. He's good.
Or maybe 1 point less, but I think he got the silver medal, right? And so you can't really argue with success. I mean, he's been very, the results are there. Hans, of course, also, he has good results in blitz. I mean, he shared the top place in the FIDE World Blitz. Then he went to the knockout stage and lost to Magnus. But it wasn't a one-sided match against Magnus. It was, I mean, 2.5, 1.5. It was a competitive match.
Yeah. Yeah.
He won a game, lost the fourth game. But okay, he's playing Magnus. I mean, obviously there's nothing bad or shameful about that result. Besides that, he had a good result in the online speed chess championship portion. Then when he played in Paris, he did lose pretty badly to Hikaru and to Magnus. But again, Hikaru and Magnus are extremely formidable players. So I wouldn't call him like among the top five blitz players in the world, or probably not in the top 10 blitz players in the world. But he's definitely capable of competing with the best blitz players in the world. That's for sure. And yeah, him against Dubov, I would call pretty much a toss-up. Again, it's 18 games played over 2 days. Is that correct?
I think it's just 1 day.
1 day.
I want to say it's 1 day.
18 games in 1 day.
I want to say it's just 1 day.
18 games in 1 day. No, but that'll take so long.
You think so? It's not that bad. It's like 8 hours of chess, maybe.
That's what I meant.
It's fine. I think that's kind of the idea.
What if it's
that's
a, what they what's want. A tiebreak if there's a tie?
I have no idea.
I don't know the exact format. Do they share?
I don't think they share anything. I actually don't know what the price is. Like, I know what the punishment is. I don't know what the price is. The punishment is that whoever loses has to answer a question with a lie detector.
Okay.
We're not going to speculate on the question.
I'll just check the price because I assume that Hans's Twitter will tell us the price.
We should definitely speculate. On you guys should definitely speculate on the question.
No, he did not. There's no. It's not clear what the price is.
Again, I'm not sure what the price is. I know what the punishment is, but there might not be a price.
No, this is the whole point. It's a totally meaningless thing because, just give me that. Like, what? Let's imagine I'm Hans and you're Dubov, and you ask me a question. Ask me a question.
You're Dubov.
I'm Hans. I can also do Dubov if you want.
No, you should definitely do Hans.
Okay, I'm Hans.
Did you cheat against Magnus?
No.
But like, what, I mean, what if that happens? But the, it'll,
what if he probably happens? Didn't? Like, most likely he didn't.
No, of course. Yeah. And, again, I don't know. This could be either way, but
I don't know exactly how the machines work, but I guess they measure some stress response.
One question is kind of crazy. I mean, it should be like a whole interview, right?
I mean, normally you would ask something like, have you cheated more than you admitted to?
Yeah.
Like, at least that is more relevant than, did you cheat in this over the board game where basically most people don't think that he did at
right,
this point.
Right, right.
So of course, yeah, if you're like, that would be very, very, yeah, that would be like the most damning if he did, let's say.
What would you ask if you were Hans and I was Dubov?
I guess I would also ask, have you cheated online?
But he sort of confessed that, right? Dubov.
He said that he was playing from
other people's accounts or something like that. Or he did in case he thought that somebody else was cheating. Is that how he phrased
maybe,
it?
Maybe. I don't know, but I think maybe he did say something like this.
I hope I'm not putting words into his mouth, but that's basically what's out there.
I don't know, of course. But this is sort of a thing that some people have commonly done. I've heard from different people that, yeah, they suspect that they're just checking to see if, I mean, I think like a very big distinction is it a tournament or is it like some kind of 3-0 game that you're playing?
Random game. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it's obviously bad to cheat in any game under any circumstances, including if you suspect that your opponent's cheating. I still think it's not good. But if there's nothing online, it is less bad.
Hmm.
Once you're cheating in money events, it's worse. And then the worst thing would be if you have like a systematic approach to cheating, you know, like a long-term, scheme for cheating or something, a conspiracy where you involve other people or where you defraud a great deal of money. I mean, obviously there are different levels to this and, people might only confess to the lowest possible level, right? Like, I mean, we know what Han said, right? Which was that he did it occasionally in a few games when he was 12 years old to boost his rating. And then when he was 16 years old to boost his rating and it was not for money and so on and so forth. And the chess.com report said something different. And then they had this whole lawsuit to
litigate that.
I guess to clear it up, although both sides will have their story. I mean, maybe they'll at some point come out with it. They probably will.
Yeah.
To tell their story. But again, I don't really see what kind of question which could be asked, even assuming that the lie detector gives an accurate response.
One question is meaningless, yeah.
Unless we assume that the lie detector does give an accurate response, which I think is not very clear, and then you ask something like, did you cheat over the board? And then he says no, and then the lie detector is like, oh, you actually have.
Yeah.
Then people will still say the lie detector isn't accurate and there's plausible deniability. And the more likely thing is that if you ask a question like that, he just says no. And the lie detector says, that's true.
Yes.
And then it's like, all four is just ridiculous. And then there's always going to be a question that it's not actually an accurate reading and maybe you can fool it. Or maybe, I mean, usually I've seen this. I don't think that they really use this in serious situations.
No, it's not accurate. Supposedly not accurate, at least not for, you know, litigation, like actual litigation or, you know, proving murder. I don't think you can do that.
Yeah, but it does look like, I mean, if you say something and then it says you're lying, it does look bad.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, chess.com has been doing this all.
But as an entertainment thing.
Yeah.
Like,
I mean, it's on Levitov chess. It's going to be entertainment. Yeah. Like,
sure. Okay.
The whole match, that's the whole point of it. Entertainment.
Sure. Then that's fine.
That's the whole point of it.
Entertainment is fine. I mean, they want to make some kind of ridiculous spectacle of it. That's fine.
I think it's going to be a competitive match.
No, the actual match, I'll be interested to see the results. The polygraph afterwards, I don't really care.
You take Dubov, you said his slight favorite.
I said 50-50. Yeah, but okay, maybe
I'll take Hans. I'll take Hans.
Just based on the last two World Blitz Championships.
Yeah.
I mean, Dubov did very well. I put weight into that.
Yeah.
still, I do consider Hans to be a very good Blitz player, and he did beat Vidit in a match. Of course, Vidit probably not as successful in Blitz as either Duob or Hans.
He did Anish. He beat Anish also.
Did he beat him in the Blitz?
Played Blitz also.
Yeah. Yeah, they played Blitz. I mean, it was like classical Blitz rapid.
He probably did beat him in Blitz. Yeah. He was a bit demoralized. I think he was, the match was over.
Anish is quite a good Blitz player. I wouldn't call him among the best among the top 10 in the world. Again, I wouldn't say Anish is top 10 in the world in Blitz, but he's a very, very good Blitz player. So that's a meaningful result as well.
It's going to be close. It's going to be close and it's going to be fun. That's for sure. Cool. Last topic really quick, because we got to go get some food. Champion Showdown, the Kings, new format, triathlon of chess. That's how they're describing it. Classical, rapid, and blitz, semi-classical, not federated. Nothing is federated. Neither the blitz or the rapid. What's your take on that? Are you getting ready for that? How do you even get ready for that type of competition?
I mean, I'm going to have to consider, like, what kind of openings do I want to play in a tournament where there's no ratings?
That's a good point.
And all I'm playing for is money.
Yeah, good point.
And it's not a qualification tournament for anything. I'm just basically playing for money. And, like, do I want to actually use opening ideas with this in mind? I mean, of course, for me, ratings and tournament wins are take more priority over we're playing for cash, just cash.
Sure. Wins. Yeah.
So
it's an exhibition match, exhibition. Yeah, tournament.
It's an exhibition for money. I mean, I've done these things in the past, exhibition for money. Of course, money is a motivator, but not as big of a motivator as, like, I'm wondering who is the winner of the tournament. Is it just whoever wins the most money? Is that how it works?
Yes.
I suppose so. But, like, let's say two players win the same amount of money. They probably don't even have a playoff. It's just, okay.
That's actually a good point. Yeah. There probably wouldn't be a playoff.
So it more feels like some kind of like poker thing.
Yeah. Like we're playing cash games. Yeah. Cash games. Yeah.
We're just playing for money. It's kind of novel to chess. That's true.
It is.
But I don't think it's the best format for chess.
Yeah. I'm excited to, I mean, mostly watch it. Obviously with that in mind, the fact that, you know, there's a little bit less pressure than usual. So that's going to be, I feel it's going to be exciting in terms of results, in terms of drama, openings wise, as you just mentioned, probably not everybody would play their main openings.
I still think it's a very interesting event. I mean, and also I think that for a lot of people, the money will be a major motivator. And
huge. Yeah.
They're going, because you can, I think, make around 60 grand if you win all your games. I don't think anyone will win all their games, but you can make 60 grand in 3 days winning all your games. And that's a lot of money. So people will definitely be motivated. Of course, nobody's going to win all their games because we're playing 9 games.
Yeah.
3 semi-classical, 3 blitz, 3 rapid against 3 different players. We don't know who.
Hmm.
Well, I know my first opponent will be Hikaru. I don't know my second or third opponent.
So you start with a semi-classical, rapid, then blitz, right?
I think how it works is that one plays two. I think first is blitz.
First is blitz, okay.
First is blitz, then rapid, then semi-classical. One plays two, so one and two seeds, Hikaru and I. 3 plays 4, 5 plays 6. Then, second round, 1 plays 2 based on money earned.
Points earned.
But let's just imagine that everyone drew all the games, so everyone has the same amount of money. Then I wouldn't play Hikaru, because we can't repeat opponents.
Hmm.
So I can never play Hikaru again. I can only play him once.
Hmm.
Also, not every... But it is possible to that 1 and 2 would be us. Mm. After the second round, for example. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So they wanted to make sure that we don't repeat the same opponents. So they just added that stipulation in. I don't know.
3 days, cool exhibition match. That starts on the 4th. I will be doing commentary alongside Yasser and Katharina. So that's exciting for me personally, because I'm getting back into the commentary booth, at least live. I've done it online, but live. and back in St. Louis. Cool. Fabi, let's go get some food. And that's it for the day. Cheers. Let us know in the comments what you think the question, first of all, is going to be for the loser, either for Hans or for Dubov. And what do you think the result of that match will be? I think that's one of the exciting matches that is going to happen in this coming week. Let us know in the comments and we'll see you in a few days. Cheers, guys.